This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings, and none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver, a charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Cause it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
Danny Minogue, welcome to Joy 94.9. Are you still recovering from this week's X Factor?
Oh, yes. I've just got home from a full day's work of it. And it's a pretty intense show. And, it wears you out, but I love it. I am absolutely addicted to it. The whole country is, in fact, over here.
Now, it seems like everything's come full circle for you in the last few years. I mean, you started off on a talent show in the 80s, and now you're in your third year judging on one of the world's biggest talent shows. How does that feel?
I never realised, you know, that I would be doing something like this. My sister had said to me years ago, you'd be great on a judging panel on one of these shows, and I just kept saying to her, really? Are you sure? Why would I be good at it? And I couldn't see what she could see and maybe what the producers could see. But I, especially with X Factor, I love the mentoring and helping the contestants and, I guess, using that experience that, you know, I used to do when I was on Young Talent Time in Australia, and we did the Saturday big, you know, family show, and now that's what I'm doing here with X Factor in the UK.
Now, it's a really big deal landing a gig like this on the X Factor, and even Australia's Got Talent. How did you manage to catch Simon Cowell's attention?
I don't know, actually. I think the producers for Australia's Got Talent had lined me up for that judging panel, and then Simon actually saw the tapes after I was on the show. I mean, he's got these TV shows all over the world, so he doesn't control, you know, exactly every single person on every version of it in every country. So it was after I'd done Australia's Got Talent, and they were really happy with what I'd done, and they'd sent the tapes back for them to see in the UK, and I think that's when they sort of put it under Simon's nose and said, oh, I think you should have a look at this. So I think with a few things in my life, I look back on it and think, maybe I was in the right place at the right time.
Definitely. So do you ever show them YouTube clips of your Young Talent Time performances?
No.
You never go, okay, guys.
They're all on there in their full glory, and my friends are constantly emailing them to me when they're bored at work. They look them up, chuckle their heads off, and then send them to me going, ha ha, look at this. And it's so, so funny. But I remember going back to Channel 10 once, and I was being interviewed on a show called Rove, and they had said to me, oh, the wardrobe department there has all of the Young Talent Time costume fillings. You want to go and look at them? And I was like, yes, please. Ran down there and actually ended up stealing one of the costumes that I used to wear. So, I mean, it was such happy memories for me and so crazy. I mean, you know, you look back and you think, oh, look at the daggy costumes and look at my terrible sprayed hair. But it was a really good experience and really good fun.
Now, it's been a massive year for you so far. You've become a mum and you're publishing your first autobiography, My Story. Now, tell me, why the tell-all book? Why now?
I guess it was weird because I'd been approached by publishers over the last few years to write a book, and I just thought they were mad. I thought, well, I don't have a story to tell. I don't know if it'd be interesting, because I love reading autobiographies, and I just couldn't imagine in a million years that something that I would write would be also be on the shelf and people would want to pick it up and read it. And it wasn't after, it wasn't until I did an interview in London with a journalist called Piers Morgan, and his show is very in-depth. When he has a guest on, you're the only guest on, you talk for 2.5 hours non-stop only about your life. So it wasn't until I did that that I stopped and realised that there were a lot of big things that I'd been through that people were interested in, and people stopped me on the street after that and said, oh my God, that interview was so moving, and I was either touched by this that you said or I really related to it. And I actually enjoyed, you know, the changes that it had made with me sort of talking to my family and to my friends about stuff that I'd been through. And it was even brilliant to speak to complete strangers about this stuff as well.
Absolutely. Now, you've been in the public eye for over 3 decades now. Can you take me back to how you felt when the media suddenly stopped adoring everything you do as a child and started scrutinising you as a grown woman?
I've always been in the public eye. So as a kid, we were, you know, judged every week on what we did, and there were people who liked it and people who didn't like it. But I was part of a show that was adored, and you were part of some other big machine. It's always scary when you go out on your own and you release your own records, or even now releasing my own book, and there's not that big machine there to back you up. It's only you. And so if it's criticized or adored, loved, you're the only person standing there. But that's, I guess that's what I do. That's my job, and I've always taken the good with the bad.
Was it a shock to you, though, having to stand up for yourself for the first time? How did you deal with that?
I don't think it's a shock. I mean, my parents were always very grounded with me and just, you know, had said from the beginning, you know, this kind of a career, it doesn't last forever. Make sure you've got something else to fall back on. And as a teenager, I studied really hard at school because I never thought that this was what I would end up doing. And in fact, I was always the person who was thinking, this is going to end, it's not going to continue. So I guess I always, as a protection thing for my own feelings, I put it out there that, okay, this stuff, it's not going to last forever, and it will have a time limit on it, and when people stop enjoying it, then I will stop doing it. And, you know, I've gone through some rough patches with my career, but I've sort of changed direction and gone on to do something else. And as you say, now I've wound back exactly where I started off. In sort of family entertainment.
Now, I really wanted to know, because you, Danny, you are the queen of clubs over there. I mean, 12 consecutive number one dance singles in the UK. That's more than anyone else there.
Yeah, it's been a great experience. I mean, I've got to work with the coolest remixers and producers, and, you know, there's been times that I talk about in the book where people have approached me to do things, and I just think, why on earth have you asked me to do that? You could have asked anyone to do it, and these fantastic opportunities. And it is, it's only when you write a book or something, you sit back and sort of realise, oh my God, there's now a body of work there. There's years and years that have gone into that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, judging by what you're telling me now, it sounds like you're kind of closing a chapter on music. Is that the case for you?
I don't think I'll ever close it completely. I don't know what form it will take. I mean, for me, I love music. It will always be around me, whether I'm performing it or not professionally. I have recently recorded a few new songs, and they're songs that I've recorded because they really stand out to me. They came to me just at a point when I had decided, no, I don't want to do any more music. Mm. I've got other things going on. I'm going to concentrate on the TV work. And just as I'd sort of decided in my mind, no, I'm not going to do it anymore, these brilliant songs presented themselves to me. And I'm still not quite sure what I'm going to do with them yet. This year's sort of gone, taken over with, you know, having the baby and doing the different TV shows and the book and stuff. So I haven't really had time to focus on it. So
Danny,
it's a bit of a watch this space. Watch this space. I don't know yet. And I'm not teasing you. It's not a whole wind-up. That I know what I'm doing, and I'm saying I don't. I honestly don't know what I'm doing with it. I've just got some tracks that I've recorded that I really, really love, but I'm not sure if they'll ever see the light of day. We'll see.
Oh, Danny, you know, 1,000 million gay fans out there are probably dying the minute they hear that. It's been, over 3 years, Danny? Come on. It's been over 3 years since we heard any new music. Maybe put out a little EP.
I know. Well, we'll see. I mean, at the moment, I'm just sort of, you know, getting through each day, trying not to have a nappy stuck to my head. But maybe one day we'll put the disco heels back on and, you know, get back into the club. We'll see.
So I heard a rumour that you did some tracks with the Freemasons. Is that true?
I have met up with the Freemasons and I've written one song with them, but as I said, we haven't done any more with it. The guy that I wrote the song with, Biff, is just amazing. He's written loads of songs with my sister, and in fact now he's working with me on The X Factor, because where we mentor our category, there used to be one musical director that did all the music for all of the contestants. And now we have our own musical director for each category.
Oh, wow.
And my musical director is Biff, who I wrote
Very
the song
good.
With. So it's really weird how things sort of come back around. And I know the Freemasons are big fans of The X Factor too, so they're watching every week. And who knows? We might just end up doing something, but, you know, we only want to do it if it's going to be really brilliant, because I mean I'm such a huge fan of their work, and everything that they put out is superb. So you know, I would want mine to be the same.
So I mean, is there a part of you that still feels connected to dance music?
I think there will always be that part, and particularly with my friends that I see all the time, like Roger Sanchez was just in town and he's calling me up and telling me what he's working on, and I always get to hear stuff that's around and you can't help but get excited and I love that kind of music. But it is definitely, as you get older, I think it's more nerve-wracking releasing new music. I think, you know, the music industry is changing all of the time, and there's a lot of new young people, you know, doing different stuff. And you kind of think, oh, my God, is there still a place for me out there in the music industry? And yeah, I don't know. In my mind, I've still got a question mark about it.
Danny Minogue, as far as the gay community is concerned, there will always be a place for you on the club charts, on our airwaves, on everyone's iPods here.
Well, thank you. I hope that if I do come out with something that, you know, that it's good enough to grace Joy FM again.
Oh, absolutely. So it's no secret that, you know, we absolutely love everything you do, but what is it, do you think, that's so special about your relationship with the gay community?
I don't know. I think it's been a bond that's matured over many years. It's been the support that I've had, and I guess sort of certain things that I've done over the years. In London, I think a big part of that has been all the performances that I've done at a club called GAY.
Mm.
And in in the book I talk a little bit about it, because when I first started performing there, it wasn't the normal thing to do as part of a pop promotion. And in fact, people were worried that if you performed in a gay club, that it would be a bad thing to do for your music. And I knew that the people who went to this club loved the kind of music that I did. So I just thought, well, you know, I'm going to put that aside and I'm still going to go to this club and I'm going to perform there and I don't care what anybody thinks about it. And I think it's those things that you, those statements that you make where you are putting your faith in somebody that they then trust you with that in return. And as I say, this is a relationship that's been built over many years and I've absolutely loved being a part of the gay music scene. I think it's fun music. It makes me happy. You know, I always tune into Joy FM when I come home to Melbourne. So, you know, it's a big, big part of my life, and I hope that that continues.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about a very exciting new chapter in your life, becoming a mum. What has been the most unexpected thing about motherhood?
Well, it's very un-disco Danny to be a mum. I occasionally put on my heels to go to work, and after wearing flat shoes for the last few months of my pregnancy, and I just said to Chris the other day, I said, oh, when Ethan starts, like, really, he's a little toddler and he's running around, I've just realised I won't be able to wear the heels because I won't be able to run after him. Of course, this has only just occurred to me now. It's life-changing from the heels to everything else. I mean, your whole world becomes dominated by making this small person happy. So it's, you know, it's a big learning curve, and I'm glad that, you know, my brother has already got two children, so he can sort of teach me the ropes, and if there's anything I'm freaking out about, I've got his number on speed dial.
So does baby Ethan come with you on the X Factor set sometimes?
Yeah, he comes to work with me every day. Oh. Wherever I go, he comes with me, and I guess it's, you know, in one way it's hard to go back to work because I don't want to not be giving him 100% of my time and energy, but I am very fortunate and lucky as a mum to be able to have him so close by all the time.
So have all the contestants kind of bonded with him?
The contestants have, and tonight one of our guests on the show is Michael Bublé, and I've met Michael quite a few times over the years, and I went up to say hello, and then he said, is your baby here? Can I please come and meet him? Can I come into the dressing room? So it's really weird, the stories that I'll be able to tell Ethan when he's grown up, you know, stuff that was going on that he didn't even know about.
Excellent. Look, Danny Minogue, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's so nice to be back on Joy FM, and I'll be back in Melbourne, I guess, in just over a month. So I'm looking forward to summer in Melbourne.
Oh, that is so good, because I was just thinking, you know what? You're actually stuck with two winters if you're going to stay in the UK for a bit. That sucks.
Yeah. I had the start of the year winter in London, then came back to Australia, had winter again, and I'm now back in winter again in London. So honestly, I am just picturing getting back to my new house. I've got the pool in the back garden. I want to put on a bikini and put on some good disco dance music and just get in that pool.
Oh, that sounds really good, Danny. So,
I'm relying on you guys to have the perfect playlist for the pool party.
Oh, absolutely. It's Joy, so you know we'll bring it.
Yeah, you'll bring it on. No pressure.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.